Is Al Whitney. Welcome to In Defense of Humanity on this first day of July 2017. This program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species while accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and businesses built upon, is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on our planet. Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women. Much of the information discussed on this show can be found on my website, anticorruptionsociety.com. If you need to remind yourself why humanity is worth defending, please read and enjoy the In Defense of Humanity page listed at the top of my homepage. I'd like to make new listeners aware that there is a free People's Empowerment Guide to our corporate commercial legal system on my website called Lawfully Yours. It is a collaboration of many men and women in the legal accountability movement. You can locate it by clicking on the Lawfully Yours tab at the top of the homepage. Our guide has been viewed more than 50,000 times since it was posted in 2014, and it's now in its 9th edition. We keep adding to it as more info and ideas come to our attention. This guide contains valuable strategies for challenging the non-existent authority of our corporate government. Well, tonight I'd like to talk about, I'd like to defend humanity, as the name of the show implies. That's one of my favorite positions to take. I will always defend humankind. I know we're not perfect. I think we're amazing. Again, go read that page, and that's what I think of humanity. We have more power than we know. We are creative. We are funny. What's going on right now, which is horrific, ongoing wars, ongoing human trafficking, drug pushing, tyranny, and it does all seem to be coming from the same location. But tonight I'd like to talk about what is human nature. And a lot of conversations and philosophers have tackled this topic for probably centuries, probably since the beginning of time. What is nature? What is nurture? What accounts for the way we behave? There's departments of psychology, sociology has been studying humanity forever. And some of these so-called researchers believe they have come up with a pretty comprehensive understanding of human nature and why humans behave the way they do. And one of these individuals is the is Professor Philip Zimbardo. I don't know how many people are familiar with him, but I ran across a lecture he gave at MIT in 2007, and I listened to it, and I was just absolutely astounded by what he had to say. As usual, there was quite a bit of truth that was being told, but at the same time, there were lies that were hidden from his audience. Unfortunately, he has quite a professional reputation, and a lot of people hire him to come and give lectures and talk about a book that he wrote called The Lucifer Effect. I don't know if anyone recalls, any of the listeners recall, that Professor Zimbardo did an experiment at Stanford in 1971 with some students called the Stanford Prison Experiment. And that experiment was the basis of his book, The Lucifer Effect. And that is partly one aspect of his reputation that gets him so much notoriety, is that experiment. The good news is there are people who are questioning the validity of that experiment, but I took some clips from a talk that he gave at MIT in 2007, and he spoke to this audience, and he was promoting his book, The Lucifer Effect, but he was also explaining the role he was called upon to play in defending the Abu Ghraib, one of the Abu Ghraib prison guards. Does everybody remember that horrific episode? The pictures were all over. Someone leaked out that these prison guards in Iraq were actually tormenting the Iraqi prisoners and taking these horrific pictures of them in these horrific positions. The world was stunned. I was stunned. We were all stunned to think that our soldiers, our American soldiers, would partake in such an incident. Well, apparently they did. And Professor Zimbardo, when he was asked to be on the defense team to defend the prison guard that was in charge at the night shift that many of these pictures were taken, was actually being prosecuted for what he had done and what he had participated in and what he had allowed to be done on his watch. So the defense decided to hire Zimbardo to help defend him against the charges. Unfortunately, he was still charged and he had a dishonorable discharge and he was in solitary confinement and things did not go well for him. But Zimbardo used what those prison guards did and compared it to the book that he had written, the experiment that he had done in 71. So he kind of put the two together, and that was the basis for his book called The Lucifer Effect. So I'd like to play some clips from this lecture that he gave at MIT in 2007 and make some comments. Perhaps open the discussion to others. He is making this claim that there's a certain type of human behavior that's common to us all, and I think that's questionable. So why don't we start with the first clip? This is Professor Philip Zimbardo at MIT in 2007.
So what I get from the Milgram study is not simply, oh, gee, how easy it is to seduce good people to do bad things. It's really a recipe, if you look at the details, for how cult leaders, for how con men, for how authorities can seduce any of us into doing evil deeds. You got to start with ideology. All evil begins with a big lie. I studied torturers in Brazil who tortures death squad executioners. And there was national security is threatened by communists and socialists. And communists and socialists have to be interrogated, made to confess, and then killed. And these were by fascists that our government supported, fascists throughout Latin America, Central America, and Greece. And now it's turned around, so the enemy is not communist socialists, it's fundamentalist Muslim. You always begin with a small first step. just sign here, just give 10 cents, just a drop of blood. You always begin with a step that it seems insignificant because you cannot imagine that that's the first step in the descent to hell. And then you want successively increasing small actions. You want to start with a just authority, and he's going to now change, but gradually over time. So we teach our children to respect authority, but we don't teach them to make that distinction between a teacher who starts off good and now is abusing. You need rules. Rules are impersonal ways to control personal behavior, but when the rules are vague and changing, you always say, I told you the rule says. And you say, I don't remember that. I don't remember that thing about errors. Well, it's your fault not to remember. The rule says. Situation always relabels. This is out of Orwell. So you are now an aggressor harming somebody, but no, you know, you're a teacher helping, so keep shocking. You're helping this person. You're a good father preparing his son for the hard knocks of the world, so keep knocking him around. You always want models of compliance. You always want to say, look, all your neighbors bought my journals, or here's all the people who are willing to do this. You want verbal dissent. You say, yeah, you're a good guy. Say it again. You're not that kind of person. That really, the puppy doesn't care. Doesn't care if you're crying, doesn't care if you say, I'm not that kind of person. Just don't keep shocking the button. So what you want is verbal dissent, which is a feel-good thing, but you insist, if you're the evil authority, on behavioral compliance. Keep pressing the button. And last thing is, make exiting difficult. This is the key to date rape. Nobody dates a rapist. You date friends, a guy, a classmate, so forth, so on. And now he's all over you, and you say, time out. No, I don't want to do this. And he's not listening. And as long as you maintain the usual traditional female, good woman orientation, he's going to be all over you. You don't know how to exit. You don't know how to do what you have to do. In this case, scream, call for the police, kick him in the groin, whatever you have to do. But unless you know how to exit a situation, you're going to be trapped as in the Milgram study.
Now, on those 10 points, which he went into more detail, but I just kind of wanted to outline them. On those 10 points, I think he's pretty much on target. I don't know if any of the listeners watched any of the Leah Remini programs on arts and entertainment, A&E, where she was exposing the Church of Scientology. Well, many of the people that she interviewed, including herself, explained that exact formula that Zimbardo just laid out is how they got into Scientology, and it is exactly, for them, it was exactly what he just said. The ideology behind Scientology is they're helping mankind. It sounds so good. But again, he points out that it you're doing something, it's the greater good, so the means justifies the ends. That's the first thing people need to be aware of. Whenever you engage in a program or join a club where the ends are justifying means that are questionable, that's when we really need to stand back, because that's where this thing goes completely off the track. And it does so exactly how he explained. It starts in small steps. I don't know if people remember how the whole vaccine program came to America, but it started in small steps. Smallpox and was the only one for many, 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 many years. Then in the 50s, they brought in polio. Now, it's just completely out of control. And they've reached the point where they're recommending 13-year-old girls are getting a vaccine called Gardasil that doesn't work. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do. They're even advertising it on TV for boys, and it causes great harm. So all the people in the public health field, all the pediatricians, all the school nurses, they bought on to the idea of vaccines as being safe and effective, and incrementally, the number of vaccines has grown and grown, so that when we complain about Gardasil or we complain about hepatitis B for a newborn, the program is already underway. All their peers support this vaccination agenda, this vaccination program. There may be a few who are complaining about maybe Gardasil or about hepatitis B for infants. They're allowed to complain. However, they're still required to be compliant. And if you are a public health nurse or a nurse in a pediatrician's office or even a pediatrician, exiting from the vaccination agenda is extremely difficult. So I think that he has fairly well outlined how large groups of people can be directed to doing the wrong thing. And if you do it incrementally, and if you do it the way this is described, the way he described it, you can understand how come all these pediatricians are going along, all these public health nurses are going along, and they're all doing the wrong thing, and they're all actually harming our children, and they are all actually engaged in evil to the nth degree. I mean, injecting toxic substances into our children, damaging them for life, is, I can't think of anything really more evil than that. But that is kind of what he described. So when it comes to that, and of course the big lie is that vaccines are safe and effective. In the Church of Scientology, the big lie is we're helping mankind. So I think he's got that part wrong, but let's go on and listen to what else he adds to that. When he brings in Abu Ghraib, that's when things get pretty fuzzy. Okay, let's listen to the next several clips.
While Milgram's doing that, I'm reading Goulding's Lord of the Flies. And Goulding's Lord of the Flies, if you remember, is about how one of the boys changes his appearance, paints himself, and now can get the other boys to do it. They can do something that they were unable to do before. It's about the power of anonymity, the loss of control, that disinhibits sexual behavior and violent behavior. That was the theme of this story. Boys got hungry. The only food was pigs. They tried to kill the pigs. They couldn't do it. Killing was inhibited. These are Christian choir boys, according to Goulding. But now, simply changing your external appearance somehow disinhibited, liberated them from these constraints. And the question is that a novelist conceit or is that psychologically valid? Essentially, in this situation, what he's talking about is ordinarily what controls our behavior is cognitive control. It's thinking about what would happen if I'm responsible, suppose I'm accountable if anybody found out. It's really self-constraint that keeps us from behaving immorally. And if you knock this out, and you now make the situation the controlling factor, meaning what is everybody else doing, and I'm going to do what everybody else does, then you set up for evil. We tell them it's a study of how we want to see how women, how creative women can be under stress. Their job be creative, your job is to stress them. So again, it's reasonable, okay? Psychology is interested in that relationship, but we don't want them to see your reaction. So we're going to put you in a big floppy lab coat and put a hood over you because we want to eliminate nonverbal behavior. And there's going to be four people in your group. We're going to take away your name. You're one, you're two, you're three, you're four. And within the frame of the study, nobody's laughing. It seems reasonable because they bought, again, the big cover story. Social psychologists call it the cover story. It's, again, our big lie. And now we give them a sample of the shock. And again, whenever you hear about research, the first question, second question while you're listening is, what is the comparison group? What is the control group? These are women from the same population, NYU students in introductory psychology, randomly assigned, you flip a coin. They're in the condition where you're going to individuate them. You're going to emphasize the individuality. They have name tags, Cynthia Jackson, Marsha Johnson. In the other group, we de-individuate. We say you're one, you're two, you're three. We cover your appearance. So it's really a study of individuation versus de-individuation. Now, there's nobody there like Milgram. You must go on. I leave the room. I go inside. They're looking through a screen, and here's the first of the victims. I give her something. She has to give me a remote associate, creative thing.
And we'll be back. We'll be right back.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Nutrimedicals Calm Mind supports a relaxed mood and helps to support your brain neurotransmitter. Helps lower blood pressure. Helps to make you feel calm all day long and helps to make it easier to go to sleep. Calm Mind contains GABA. It also contains xanthine and L-theanine, an amino acid from green tea. And it contains myo-inositol, a special B vitamin. Because it's such high quality, it really works amazingly for anxiety, panic attack, and for depression. Get Calm Mind at NutriMedical.com, NutriMedical.com, or 888-212-8871. The special studies that have been done on Calm Mind show that it helps to stabilize the neurons in the brain, lower the autonomic nervous system that raises blood pressure, and it helps to support normal calming activity throughout the body. That means you're going to have much higher energy level, much more stable mood, be able to tolerate stress better, and it helps to stabilize blood sugar as well. So order Calm Mind at NutriMedical.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
When an amber light goes on, your job, put your finger on the button. When a green light goes on, shock is in the system. You believe that because she starts screaming and twisting and turning. She's not being shocked, but there's a little light that she sees, and she's an actress. You have 20 trials that shock her. We drag her out and bring the second woman in. You have 20 trials again. So here's the data summary. Here's, now, it's how long you hold your finger down. So the dependent measure, the thing we're looking at is it's the shock duration. In the Milgram study, it was the intensity. This is how long you hold your finger down. The longer you hold your finger down, the more she's jumping and turning. This is the first 10 trials, and this is the second 10, averaged across the two different women. At the beginning, the women who are individuated start at a low level, and they stay there. What's critical is the women who we put in the Lord of the Flies phenomena. We take away their identity. We made them feel anonymous. They begin giving twice as much, and over time, more and more. This increase is a significant linear increase. That means as they do it, they do more and more and more. And we find this over and over again. I did this study with the Belgian military. Instead of hoods, we had masks. Instead of shock, we had people throwing styrofoam balls. No matter how you do it, if you make people anonymous and you put them in a situation where they have permission in that situation to be violent, they will be violent. Now, an anthropologist read the article I wrote on this and said, you know what? If it's true what you say, then we can get out of that little basement lab at NYU, and we can go in the real world, because the question is, does it make a difference if before warriors go to war, they change their appearance or not? It makes a difference in terms of how they treat their victims. So he said, In some cultures, we know, they go to war without changing their appearance. In other cultures, they do the Lord of the Flies thing. They paint themselves, they put on disguises, or they wear masks. And so he went to the human area files and found 23 societies, cultures, where there was two bits of evidence. Do the warriors change their appearance or not? And then the dependent measures, do they kill, torture, mutilate? Not pressing a button on a shock box, kill, torture, mutilate. And he found 15 cultures where warriors changed their appearance and 8 cultures where they did not. And he found 10 cultures where they didn't kill, torture, mutilate, and 13 where they did. What happens if they don't change their appearance? If they don't change their appearance, they don't do anything. Only 1 of 8 kill, torture, mutilate. But we don't care. We care about the red zone. If they change their appearance, what happens is 12 of 13 that kill, torture, mutilate first change their appearance. If they change their appearance, 12 of 15 kill, torture, mutilate. So what does that tell us? That tells us culture has wisdom. All wars are about young men sent to war to kill other young men by old men. That's what war is all about. The only difference is sometimes over property, sometimes over turf, sometimes over revenge. And so you put them in uniforms. That's what a military uniform is all about. Is to take any of us in our street clothes, put us in a uniform so we behave in a uniform way. We go through training to make us kill on demand, on command. But when the war is over, what do? We say, you must turn in a uniform. It's against the law to wear your uniform once you are discharged. And so you have military uniforms. In some cultures you have masks. Some cultures you paint yourself. Because we want killing to be situationally specific.
Well, this is where I differ from him, and I'd be interested in the second hour if anyone wants to call in and give their ideas or their opinions on this. There was a book written by an author named Nick Turse called Kill Anything That Moves, and I did play that, oh gosh, it must have been last year sometime, clips from an interview that Bill Moyer did with the author, Nick Turse, where Nick investigated. He wanted to see why there was so much post-traumatic distress from the Vietnam veterans. They would come back with this terrible condition that they labeled post-traumatic distress. And when he looked into the congressional records, he discovered that the military had decided to fight the Vietnam War, and they used a mathematical formula to assess whether they were winning or losing, and that mathematical formula was based on body count. Now, it didn't matter if it was a child's body or a soldier's body or a woman's body. There had to be a body count reported daily, weekly, whatever. So the men were encouraged to create that body count. In fact, if they did not create that body count, then they could be punished. They would get rewarded with R&R if they met their quotas. And if they did not, then not only would that man who did not meet his kill quota suffer the consequences, his whole platoon would be punished. They would be forced to march in the rain. Their R&R would be denied. So the real picture is much different than what Zimbardo is presenting here. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America.
With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. And Angioprim is the result, a safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. I'm Al Whitney. Tonight we're talking about human nature, and we're reviewing the information and the writings and the musings of a Dr. Philip Zimbardo, founder, creator of the Stanford Prison Experiment. He's still selling books. He's still getting mileage out of that. And when he gave this talk, he tried to organize his thoughts and explain how it is that good men do evil deeds. And I just brought up the point that in Vietnam, these men, many of them were good men, many of them were compassionate men, many of them recognized there was no reason to kill women and children or innocents. There was no reason to torture. These are the men that came back with truly, truly traumatic psychological problems. Some of them committed suicide. They were the first group that I think it was really obvious that the war experience created this long-lasting trauma that made many of them completely dysfunctional. Now, when he talked about the anonymity aspect, it is absolutely true. I know anyone who's been in the military knows the first thing they do is they try to destroy your individuality. Everybody gets the same haircut. Everybody gets up at the same time. Everybody eats the same food. You wear the same uniforms, et cetera, et cetera. But he didn't mention compassion. He just said people don't do bad things because if they have anonymity, nobody's going to know they did the bad things. I don't agree with that at all. I think that it takes a lot to destroy the compassion and the empathy that they've been taught their whole life. If they are capable of empathizing and being compassionate, this creates a horrific, horrific emotional traumatic experience for them when they're called upon to do these things. So you have to wonder, Zimbardo never talks about empathy and compassion as being a part of normal human nature. So let's go into the next clip. Clip 5, I believe.
Another way you can get good people to do bad things is you can dehumanize the victim. We don't have to change you. We just have to change your perception of the victim. We don't want you to think of them as kin or kind, similar to you. In the extreme, they're animals. So my colleague Al Bandura did a study I'll describe very quickly, a very important study that is hardly ever referenced. He gets students from one college, let's say Stanford, in groups of three, and he said, students from another college are coming, and we want you to help improve their problem-solving ability in a group. You're going to give them problems, and if they get it right, you're going to reward them. If they get it wrong, you're going to give a shock, which goes to all of them. Seems reasonable. Again, the cover story, we want to help. The assistant takes your name, and then he goes inside, and you hear over the intercom, he tells the experimenter, the students from the other school are here, they are ready. You don't know anything about them except the college students. That's neutral. In another condition, he goes inside, and what you hear him say is, the students from the other school are here, they seem to me like animals. We're going to call that dehumanize. In a third condition, he says, you hear him say, they seem like nice guys. You don't know anything about them. You haven't met them except somebody you don't know. It's a research assistant. He's an undergraduate. It says, they're animals or nice guys. Remember, you know they're college students. So what difference does it make? You have 10 trials to give them shock, and the shock goes from 1 to 8. You start at a low level. If you're neutral, you stay here. If you are in the dehumanized condition, you start at the same level. So if you only did one trial, you say it doesn't make a difference. But you get the same effect I just reported to you. You get a linear increase. They shock, and they shock significantly more over time. The good news is, if you humanize people, say they're nice guys, you get a suppression. It's better than knowing nothing. So this is a very powerful study that says, sticks and stones may break your bones, but names can kill you. Names can kill you. And that's what prejudice is about. That's what discrimination is about. That's what stereotypes are about. You give the name. So soldiers in Vietnam, we call them gooks. I don't know. I don't remember the name of Arabs now, but it's equal. What? Haji, or towel heads. Or something. But it's a way to say you're going to suspend your morality. In fact, Bandura calls it moral disengagement. Good people put their morality in neutral at some times, and then they coast. And when you coast, then it means you're going to be influenced by everybody else in that car. You've got all the backseat drivers.
Well, that is hardly news. I mean, since they've been waging war, they always demonize the enemy for the soldiers. I mean, I remember Eddie Bernays was like the first propagandist for war in our country, and to get the people behind World War I, they ran all of these little public service ads and announcements dehumanizing the Germans. So rulers have been using that strategy. That's not new. That's not Zimbardo coming up with something brand new. That's how they convince soldiers to fight other men. They dehumanize them. That's been going on a long time. Tragically, I think it's escalated. I think it's now into our medical institutions. Every time patients are seen, they're required to give a number, their birth date. So they give their name and number. And we ran into that. My family ran into that at every appointment, at every test. Even when they would bring food in on a tray, they wouldn't release the food until the employee got the patient to cough up and volunteer his number. So I do think that they're using that strategy to get good people to do bad things, even today, but that's been going on a very long time. That's not a new discovery. Let's go to the next clip.
The Stanford Prison Study I'll go through very quickly, and then we'll go back to Abu Ghraib. Stanford Prison Study, done way back in 1971, combines the individuation, anonymity of place, dehumanization, role-playing and social modeling, moral disengagement, group camaraderie. We underestimate how what a big role that plays in evil. The evil of Enron, the evil of these corporations, I'm going to talk about administrative evil later, is always getting with the program. It's always being a team player. It's never, we'd like you to cheat, lie. It begins with the accountant who says, you know, it's Friday, the numbers are not adding up. You know, why don't you just use this figure? And once you do that, that's the first step. Then next week it's, why don't you change two figures? And next week it's more and more. So the path to evil always is that, remember that first 15 volts. Prisons are about power. Power differentials. Guards have more power than prisoners, and over time, they have to demonstrate to the prisoners they have total power and the prisoners have none. The other thing that I come out of both the Stanford Prison Study and Abu Ghraib is the evil of inaction. It's the good guards never once stopping the bad guards on the same shift when the bad guards are doing these terrible things. And unlike the Milgram Study, where it's about an individual authority putting pressure on another individual, this is a study about institutions. This thing I talked, most of us live our life in institutions, in families, in schools, in religious institutions, in hospitals, in old age homes at the end. And so it's a question of institutional power to push you in a certain way against the will to resist. And we want to believe individuals have the will to resist. Individuals are rational. Individuals who operate from free will. We believe in the dignity of the individual. And so no matter what the situation is, we can resist. And that's what the study is.
Now, I think most of us will agree that if you can institutionalize evil, if all the nurses in the hospital agree that vaccines are important and we must, at whatever cost, get that parent to accept that vaccine, it becomes a much bigger problem for you when you try to protect your child from that. So he is absolutely correct. When everybody around you says this is the right thing to do, someone comes in with an argument saying, infants don't get hepatitis B because they don't engage in unsafe sex and they don't do drugs, they ignore you. And why? Because all the other nurses are ignoring you, because their bosses are ignoring you, because the pediatricians are ignoring you, even though your reason for saying no is perfectly logical. That is one reason I believe that the evil son of a guns have put so much effort into commandeering and taking over our institutions. If you can get the institution to do the evil for you, then you're pretty much home free. And sadly, the listeners to this program who have attempted to buck the system already know that what we're facing is institutional evil. So let's go to the next clip. That would be number 7, I think.
The kid you saw, he was the first prisoner to be arrested. He was the ringleader of a rebellion on the second day, but the guards crushed the rebellion physically, with physical force. And he was the first one to break down in 36 hours. And he had been a student activist at Berkeley, an undergraduate. It changed his whole life, so much so that he got a PhD at Berkeley in clinical psychology, did a dissertation on the shame of prisoners and the guilt of guards, and for the past 25 years he's been working in the San Francisco County Jail. In the movie we made, A Quiet Rage, he talks about his whole job is raising the dignity of prisoners and trying to minimize the sadism of guards. His breakdown was followed every day after that by another prisoner showing the same kind of extreme emotional distress, or breaking out in psychosomatic rash. The study, which was projected to go for 2 weeks, I had to end after 6 days. It was totally out of control. I felt I could not go to sleep knowing what the guards might do. And they did some horrendous things.
Okay. Now, this is where Zimbardo is not telling the truth. And I had read this somewhere, and I was able to locate the source. Okay, in 1997, Stanford News published a piece, and it was about a talk that Professor Christina Maslach gave to psychologists that were gathered in Toronto, August 12, 1996. And she was at the time discussing, the topic was, the Stanford Prison Experiment, still powerful after all these years. I'm going to read a short excerpt from this piece, again, that appeared at on Stanford News in January 97. Here's an excerpt. Later that evening, Christina Maslach, said she suddenly got sick to her stomach while watching guards taking the prisoners with paper bags over their heads to the bathroom before their bedtime. Her fellow researchers teased her about it. After leaving the prison with Zimbardo, she said, he asked her what she thought of it. Quote, I think he expected some sort of great intellectual discussion about what was going on. Instead, I started to have this incredible emotional outburst. I started to scream. I started to yell. I think it's terrible that you are doing this to those boys, I cried. We had a fight you would not believe. And I was beginning to think, wait a minute, I don't know this guy. I really don't. And I'm getting involved with him? Zimbardo was shocked by her reactions and upset, she said. But eventually, that night, he acknowledged what I was saying and realized what had happened to him and to other people in the study. At that point, he decided to call the experiment to a halt. Says Zimbardo, she challenged us to examine the madness she observed that we had created and had to take responsibility for, unquote. That, again, is the remarks of Professor Christina Maslach, who was the one who demanded that this experiment be brought to a halt. It was not Zimbardo himself. And he's misrepresenting his participation, his role, and his investment, and his willingness to watch this thing just go crazy right in front of him and still let it continue. So I wanted to get that in, because he's misleading all of the people that he's giving this lecture to. Okay, let's hear clip number 8, because we're going to go back to Zimbardo and Abu Ghraib.
Aside from my parallels, I mentioned James Schlesinger headed the only commission focused on the abuse of Abu Ghraib, but he was a former Secretary of Defense, and on his commission he had former generals. He says, psychologists have attempted to understand how and why individuals and groups who usually act humanely can sometimes act otherwise in certain circumstances. That's the Lucifer effect. He says, the landmark Stanford study provides a cautionary tale for all military detention operations. And his commission compares, he said, but the Stanford system was benign. In military detention operations, soldiers work under stressful combat conditions that are far from benign. And then he goes on to say, here are all the conditions operating. It's that list. They talk about de-individuation, dehumanization, moral disengagement, and more. The most interesting thing for social psychologists is the following statement. The potential for abusive treatment of detainees during the global war on terrorism was entirely predictable based on a fundamental understanding of the principles of social psychology coupled with an awareness of numerous known environmental risk factors. Findings from the field of social psychology suggest that the conditions of war, the dynamics of detainee operations, carry inherent risk for human mistreatment, and therefore what? Therefore, they must be approached with great caution, careful planning, and training. What I'm going to tell you is there was no training, there was no careful planning, and there was no caution, because in a rush to war in Iraq, none of this was thought about. So there's actually a fuller body of social psychological research, and in my book I have two whole chapters on psychological research that supports the conclusion that situations can have unexpectedly powerful influence on us. But essentially, we have substituted social psychology for those chemicals and had the same effect of transforming good people into perpetrators of evil at a given time in a given situation, not always. So we take the chemical out of his hand and we can still make good people into monsters.
Okay.
And essentially, it's, you know, the question I always get is, well, aren't some people born good and some people born evil? We really want to have a notion of evil is really and goodness are in people? And my answer is no. My work, and especially the Lucifer Effect, is really a celebration of the human mind, of its infinite capacity to be selfish or caring, to be heroic or villainous, to be creative or destructive. The human mind can do anything. We can be Mother Teresa, and we can be Saddam Hussein, because anything any human being has done, we have the capability of doing it in that situation, in that setting.
Okay, when he said the name James Schlesinger, was the one called upon to examine and investigate Abu Ghraib, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, because I know who James Schlesinger is. James Schlesinger is a dual citizen, dual American-Israeli citizen, and I looked him up, and it was on the website of the American Freedom Party. And most of you who've been listeners of RBN for any length of time know that there is a program on RBM 5 days a week put on by the American Freedom Party. Okay? James Schlesinger is a dual citizen, Israeli-American. He was also cited by Christopher Bolin in his wonderful documentary called Missing Links as one of those connected to the 9/11 crime. People. He was mentioned by Colonel Prouty as the one, along with Henry Kissinger, who in the 70s held these energy meetings, I think every year for 4 years, convincing world leaders, that oil was from fossils. Oil is a fossil fuel. He had these energy meetings, and therefore it was going to run out someday. Therefore, this was part of the justification for the petrodollar. Again, James Schlesinger was in on that con with Henry Kissinger. So now we're starting to see the hand of Israel in the Abu Ghraib prison incident. So let's continue, because it gets even more obvious that they were involved. Or is it time for a break, Sam? Okay, we'll be back shortly.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
This is Al Whitney. We've been playing clips tonight of a lecture that Professor Philip Zimbardo gave at MIT in the year 2007, where he was trying to explain what happened to Abu Ghraib and comparing it to the Stanford prison experiment. He has written a book called The Lucifer Effect. It's weak. I don't recommend you go out and buy it. Sadly, he is notorious. I'm looking at his credentials. He has been, Zimbardo has been a social political activist challenging U.S. wars in Vietnam and Iraq, as well as the American correctional system. Zimbardo has served as elected president of the Western Psychological Association, president of the American Psychological Association, the chair of the Council of Scientific Society Presidents, representing 63 scientific, math, and technical associations, and now is chair of the Western Psychological Foundation. So he has achieved a pretty high status in his profession, which does not surprise me, knowing that only if you play the game do you get these kind of positions. So let's hear the last two clips, or we'll play them one against the other, and then we'll continue.
So now let's go back in the last, last 15 minutes, let's go back to the dungeon in a real prison in Abu Ghraib. And what we need, now we know, the analytical tools that we need, and in the book I go through this in much more depth, we need to understand the person. We need to understand the physical place. What kind of place was that, that thing called Abu Ghraib? We need to understand the psychological situation, the behavioral context that this guy was in and those other soldiers were in. And then we have to ask, what was the situation that created that what was the system that created that situation? So who's this guy, Chip Frederick? He's Army Reserve MP in charge of Tier 1A night shift. He's the bad apple. So we're going to say, what was he like before he went down? What was he like when he was there? What was he like afterwards? What were the influences on him while he was on duty there? And so, as I said, I take on the role of investigative reporter. I'm going to find out everything there is to know about this guy, everything about that place. I'm not going to spend a day interviewing him, going through his psychological records. I check his... He was a prison guard in a small prison. I checked that. He had 9 medals. I found out what those medals were for. I'm talking to his wife, his sister. I'm talking to people who knew him. And then I'm talking to military people who were there at the time, independent of him and independent of the 7 men and women who did this thing. So I'm going to give the situational perspective to counter the bad apple dispositional view.
The new word on the street is bloated. Yeah, you eat this food, GMO, herbicide, pesticide. Foods aren't safe anymore. And then we eat them, and we're bloated. Our stomach says, no, no, no more, Seymour. So what we have to do is drink the tea. Are you on the tea? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Super strength tea. It will help you with the new word, bloated. You can get it today. Log on to GetTheTea.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.